Here I am, climbing up, feeling great, getting love. Here I go, risk it all, be worth it now, and that's for sure. Watch me as a rocketeer.
Right, so here we are, episode one, Fight Talk Down Under. It's a brand new podcast that we're going to be running on Fight News Australia. We're going to be coming at you every week with sort of everything to do with the Aussie fight scene. No doubt there'll be a bit of a MMA flavour on this one. But my co-host is, of course, eternal MMA superstar and host of the critically acclaimed YouTube series Saucy Picks. It's Lockjaw Justin Van Heerden. How are you, man?
Doing great. Yeah, glad to be here. Glad to be finally, you know, doing this. This has sort of been in the pipe for a bit now that we were kind of thinking about doing something like this and you know, getting this podcast going and talking about fights, talking about Aussie fights, focusing on MMA and stuff like that. So it's exciting times. I'm excited to see what's ahead.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been a bit of a long process to get here. It turns out there's a lot more involved in launching a podcast than probably either of us really realized, but here we are. So, and what a week to kick it off, really, because first of all, we've got a huge UFC 271 card coming up this weekend. It's Feb 13 Australian time. For those who don't know, it's stacked with Aussie talent, so we've got a fair bit to unpack there. But before we do, before we get to that, we've got, obviously, you had a fight coming up yourself. Eternal 64 was supposed to be Feb 26th, I think, or yep, thereabouts, and obviously that one's been scratched, so yeah, must be you know, it's just the latest in a long line of disappointments in COVID. So how are you getting on?
Yeah, obviously it's a bit frustrating. Obviously now this is like the third camp in a row where it's kind of not led to a fight, you know, not led to the culmination of doing the training and then, you know, preparing for something, and then it sort of just falls through. So I guess, yeah, towards the end of 2021, we didn't have much luck with getting fights and actually getting things to sort of come together. But it's looking like, you know, things are going to change and there's going to be sort of more options moving forward. But obviously this is more directly, not so much COVID related, I'd say. I mean, it is, but it isn't. It's more so just WA and the Premier there just deciding to tighten things up and kind of, you know, removing the possibility of Eternal going ahead there. So it is what it is, but I guess for Queensland, Victoria, New South Wales moving forward, it looks like it's going to be smooth sailing and be able to get into some MMA events and hopefully get into some fights.
Absolutely. And yeah, speaking of fights, obviously, as mentioned, UFC 271 this weekend. So we've got a lot of Aussie talent here. We've got Jacob Malkoon, Casey O'Neill, obviously Tai Tuivasa and Robert Whittaker on the card. So yeah, it's kind of like I guess we can't do UFC events in Australia just yet, but you know, they've packed all the Aussies in there just to sort of make a bit of an Australian flavor in the on the event. So that's pretty exciting. But the first one up on the card, of course, is Jacob Malkoon, who's taking on AJ Dobson. Malkoon is 1-1 in the UFC. He's coming off a win over Abdul Razak Al Hassan in April last year, and AJ Dobson's fresh off the Contender Series, had a pretty dominant win over there. So yeah, how do you view this one?
Well, I think this fight's going to be interesting. Obviously, you know, that we've seen people from the Contender Series, you know, they get on there, they're putting it all on the line, they earn that contract, they get that sort of stamp of approval from Dana. And then, you know, it almost gives them that extra fire when they then make their debut in the UFC, that they kind of want to be like, okay, well, let me show you why you made a good choice in giving me a chance, you know, giving me a chance to come into the big dance and show my skills. So I feel like AJ's going to be coming out. He's going to be, you know, more than focused on securing that win in his debut. And then from Jacob's point of view, obviously, yeah, he's 1-1 in the UFC. His debut obviously didn't go to plan. You know, that was a rough outing for him, but obviously in his last fight, he bounced back, was able to secure a victory, did so dominantly, put on an absolute clinic. And as we know, he trains with Rob, trains with the former middleweight champion of the world. So I expect him to take that momentum that he got from his last outing, bring it into this fight. He's going to be motivated because I guess, you know, you're taking the fact that Rob's going to be fighting on the same card. He's going for a title. You can imagine that the energy in their camp and at their gym was obviously like super high. So I'd imagine they're both going to be fired up. And especially Jacob, you know, first one, like you said, for the Aussies on the card. I feel like he's going to want to kick it off for a win. And I mean, honestly, looking at the fight and, you know, both guys' skill sets, I honestly see Jacob getting the submission in the second round. I feel like the first round is going to be, you know, a bit back and forth. He's going to be like finding his openings, looking to capitalize where he can take the fight down. He's obviously got very good grappling, very good wrestling. I mean, he's really well-rounded, but I mean, it's no secret those are his areas that he wants to utilize the best. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a round two submission, and I feel like he's going to get that win, get the momentum, rise it up again, and then move forward into his UFC career, 2-1, and then hopefully continue the momentum.
Yeah, I think that's a fair call. Like, you know, Dobson, he's going to be making his UFC debut. He's obviously a big athletic guy. You know, they're the sort of guys that you want to kind of drag them into the later rounds, don't you? Try and slow them down. And if Jacob's obviously, as you say, he's Robert Whittaker teammate, so they're typically pretty well equipped when it comes to cardio. So I imagine he's going to be willing to play the long game in this one.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I've had the sort of, I guess, fortune to see Jacob, you know, on the mats, see him move around, see him sort of, you know, putting the work in. And then, you know, I've been around grappling competitions, you know, where he's been competing on the same sort of competitions as me. And kind of just watching his demeanor, watching him, the pace he puts on. And I think that's why I'm sort of leaning towards a submission and, you know, leading it sort of happening in sort of the second round, if not definitely drowning him in the third, because the work rate, like as you said, the work rate those boys put on, the ability to just sort of keep pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing, you know, you're giving your opponent the problems to solve. The more he works, the more, like as you said, the more he works, the more it's going to drain out of him. But for someone that's, I guess, the more experienced grappler or the more patient grappler or the person who's able to sort of capitalize on those small sequences the most, they're going to be fresher as it goes on. So I think that's it. For Dobson, that's what's going to sort of happen. It's going to be a slow sort of decline and his athleticism and everything's just going to slowly fade away from him. And then that's what Jacob's going to be able to capitalize and sink in a choke.
Yeah, it's a bit of an interesting one as well, because Dobson, from what I can tell, he's got a bit of a wrestling background. And if we look down Malkoon's record so far, he's obviously, he fought Phil Hawes. It's probably not really much of a sample size in the 18 seconds. I think that fight lasted, but Razak al-Hassan is obviously not exactly a grappler. He's more of a stand-up fighter. So, you know, if Dobson does have that sort of wrestling background, it's going to put Malkoon to the test. It's going to sort of show how he can apply his grappling against someone who's probably a little bit better equipped to defend it and to resist there. So it's going to be an interesting test for him. At 1-1, it could really set him up if he can show his skills against someone like that.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, at this point, he's got to sort of, you've got to almost go out there, try win dominantly and kind of, you know, put on a clinic, and then you can ride that momentum and sort of go, okay, look, here, I'm here now. I'm 2-1 in the UFC. And I'm like, I'm not just here like to be a person that made it to the UFC, or I got signed to the UFC, but I couldn't hang at this level. So he has the tools to do it. And it's just going to be whether or not you can put everything else aside. Because from my point of view, if you're fighting on a card, some people fight on a card and have their teammates fighting on a card. And especially when their teammates have like high stakes, you know, at risk there, like with fighting for a world title, for example, people can let that affect them. You know, they, especially, you know, you want to see you the people around you sort of rise and do well. And then, you know, you're going out there before that person and you've got all this pressure on yourself for your own sort of goals and things that you want to achieve. And it's just going to be whether or not he can put the other stuff aside and go, okay, I've just got to do my job. I don't need to worry about what Rob's going to do. He's going to do his job, but I've just got to keep it separate and not let it sort of influence me.
Because it can sort of set the tone for your teammates, can't it? If you're sort of opening the card and if he gets beaten in the fight early on, it can kind of, I guess it can sort of set the tone for Rob's fight. But also, like, for him, you kind of alluded to there, him sort of being maybe a little bit in the shadow of Robert Whittaker. Like, you'd hate to sort of get bundled out of the UFC and be a guy who's like, oh, you know, he's Whittaker's teammate. You know what, you know, he'd be remembered as a curtain jerker for Robert Whittaker. So, you know, he's got a chance now. He's I think Dobson's going to be a fun opponent, and it's a opportunity for him to really show what he can do.
Exactly right. I think he's got he's got all of the opportunities to succeed and to get the win. It's just going to be whether or not you can put everything else aside. So I'm excited to see it, and I think it's going to be a good fight to kick it off for the Aussies, 100%.
Absolutely. And following that, an opportunity as well for Casey O'Neill on the prelim card. She's 3-0 in the UFC now. She's been ultra impressive. All three of her wins have been stoppages. So it's been an incredible start, really. She's 8-0, undefeated, full of confidence. This time out, she's taking on Roxanne Modafferi, who's obviously a pioneer of women's MMA. She's been around forever and a day, and she's 4-7 in the UFC. But I think it's she had 45 professional fights now. She's fought everyone in the women's divisions, and now this is her retirement fight as well. So that's probably the sort of one of the interesting little sort of subplots with this this fight, is that it's Roxanne's retirement fight. So she's going to be going all out. You know, she's 39 years old. So yeah, and this is her last dance. So classic crossroads fight. You've got Casey, who's obviously 3-0, on her way up the ranks. Roxanne, who's a veteran, who's obviously on her way out the door and looking to end on a high. So it's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, obviously, yeah, like you said, you sort of touched on there. Casey's obviously at the start of her sort of journey in the UFC, and Roxanne's on like, obviously, this is her last fight. She's finishing her sort of her journey in the UFC. So it's that classic sort of tale of, okay, the passing of the guard almost, in a sense. Like you sort of said, you know, Roxy's one of those people, she's so likable for everyone and any fans of fighting. And she's just got that good attitude of, okay, I'm just going to get in there. I'm going to get after it. I'm going to fight anyone, doesn't matter who it is. And I'm just going to do what I can do. And if it pays off, it pays off. If I happen to hit a little setback and lose, she's straight back into it again and ready to back it up again. So, you know, you got to appreciate that. And I think, obviously, you know, we want to see the Aussies do well. You want to see Casey succeed and get another win and move closer towards her, the top sort of ranks and start doing that. But at the same time, you can't be overlooking Roxy at all. You know, she's had a few fights where they completely counted her out. You know, the odds makers and that were like, oh, nah, no chance. And she's come in and put a veteran performance on, used her ability, used her grappling, used her ability to grind people out. And she's beat some of these women that apparently in everyone's eyes, she had no business even fighting. So as much as, you know, I think it's going to be a pretty, pretty dominant win and sort of a great showing for Casey, I still feel like, you know, the dangers are there. You know, Roxy's a very good grappler. There's the opportunity that, you know, you mess around, you find out that, you made a mistake. Now your neck's getting snatched, and there goes the zero next to the wins that you have on your record, and you take that backward step, and you got to like rebound again. But in saying that, you know, I'm obviously going to be a bit biased. I spent a number of years training with Casey and sort of seeing her sort of rise up through the Australian scene and stuff like that. So she's very talented. She's very scrappy. And I think that's sort of the bigger thing that kind of is going to separate her from Roxy in the fight, is she's very scrappy. So the talent aside, the ability to sort of fight on the feet, the ability to grapple, the ability to wrestle, all that sort of stuff aside, she's very scrappy. She doesn't take a backward step. If you hit her with a punch, if you land a takedown, she's going to throw everything back at you to get that back. And I've seen her do that to obviously people her size, and see her do that to sort of the women in the weight class that she fights in. But then I've seen her do that with, you know, some sort of like middleweights, welterweights, you know, bigger guys that she's sparring in the gym, where she doesn't take a backward step and she's like, okay, well, you know, let's go, let's fight. And that's pretty much what it is. You were never really just sparring with Casey. You were pretty much fighting, really, when it came down to it. I'm not saying that in a sense like, oh, it was like a horrible sort of situation, and you know there's injuries, risks, and you're trying to hurt each other. I just mean that it's on from the minute that the round starts to the minute the round ends. It's on, and it's like I'm coming with everything and I want to win. I don't want to lose any momentum. So I feel like, you know, she brings that into the fights. You've seen it already in her career so far in the UFC. So I feel like this time is going to be no different. And I think ultimately it's going to be a first round stoppage to Casey. And ultimately I see that happening by TKO. I feel like she's going to tag Roxy on the feet, pick her apart, hurt her, ultimately sort of engage in some wrestling, whether that's started by Roxy or by herself, it's not going to matter. She's going to be able to reverse the position, get on top, and ultimately pound her out and get the win. That's the way it's sort of, when I calculate it in my head and I kind of see both of them and the comparisons of the skills and where they're at. And like you said, the mental side of things, one person's starting their career, one person's finishing. I just feel like Casey's got that hunger, that ability to sort of keep coming forward, and she's there to, you know, solidify herself. She's not one foot out the door finishing her fight career, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the physicality might be a little bit of a difference in this fight as well. Like Casey's quite a physically strong sort of fighter. You know, she's really just been able to, even when she's sort of found herself in some sticky positions, she's just been able to kind of power her way out of situations as well. And I think that might be difficult to deal with for Roxanne. I think she's not as sort of physically powerful as some of the other girls in those divisions. So I think that's going to be a big advantage for Casey. But it is a bit of a banana peel sort of, a potential banana peel sort of fight there, as you touched on. Like, I think the Macy Barber fight is probably a cautionary tale there. Roxanne Modafferi was a huge underdog in that one, probably ruined everyone's multis when she, like you say, she put on a bit of a veteran performance and managed to beat Macy, even though there was an injury involved. But you know, I think, you know, it's probably something for Casey to look at. I'm sure they've done their homework. But again, you know, Casey fought Antonina Shevchenko last time out, who's probably not the most adept grappler in the division. She's not a bad grappler, obviously, but she's more of a striking based fighter. And whereas Roxanne is a pretty slippery grappler, so it's going to be kind of similar to Jacob Malkoon. Really, it's going to be an interesting test for Casey to see how she sort of gets on with Roxy, who's probably you know, probably going to be throwing up submissions, who's going to be able to kind of sneak out the back door when things get rough. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting one for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, it ultimately is going to come down to the first sort of exchange, whether there's a clinch or a takedown or, you know, any sort of positional situation where there's going to be the grappling involved or the wrestling or the clinching. That's going to tell the tale of exactly how much danger either one of them is going to be in. And I think that's when you'll see like the eye-opening, I guess, outcomes that could be presented by Roxy if she's able to snatch an arm or a leg or snatch the neck or get to a position, maybe secure a takedown. It's going to be what the response is from that. But like you said, you know, I'm sure Casey's team have like looked at that. They've ironed these things out. She's got some great coaches around her. So obviously, you know, she's got that ability to, like you said, dig deep and kind of get herself out of trouble, which we've kind of seen already. And that, like you said, that comes down to being the sort of younger, more physical fighter out of the two. But ultimately, I guess it's going to be a telling fight if it goes past the first round. For me, the longer the fight goes, the worse the actual odds go for Casey to win, and especially win in a dominant fashion, if you know what I mean. Like, if there's all the signs point to that, if the fight doesn't get finished in the first round, that the chances for Casey to sort of get frustrated or want to push to get that sort of finish and kind of, you know, capitalize on this opportunity, that could lead to these exchanges where we see Roxy, you know, scrambling out, snatching a position, ending up on the back, ending up in mount, and then you're in trouble. Whether you like it or not, doesn't matter how you slice it. If she's on top of you, she's got great grappling, you're in trouble. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that dynamic comes to play. But ultimately, that first exchange is going to be the sort of the telling point in my eyes.
Absolutely. No, I think we saw in the Shevchenko fight, you know, Casey got herself into a bit of a sticky situation in that first round, and she, you know, she responded in the second. She didn't sort of get frustrated. She kind of you know, she was able to reset and sort of assert her dominance in the second round. So I guess she has kind of shown that she can deal with that sort of a situation. But like you say, the longer it goes on, yeah, the worse it gets for an up and coming fighter. You know, the veterans really come into their own. They've, you know, especially someone like Roxy. She's done it all before. She's fought everyone. She's, you know, been in all kinds of situations. So it will make it difficult. But yeah, obviously, I agree with you. I think you know, Casey's going to be too much for Modafferi. I think she's just the new breed of fighter, and I think she's going to be too much for her in the end. But it's going to be a good watch for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And ultimately, Casey brings that violence, and obviously you've seen that in her fight so far within the UFC. But I guess best case scenario for me as a fan of the sport and as a fan of, you know, Roxy is, like I said, it's her last fight, it's a retirement fight. Ultimately, I'd like to see her, you know, come out of the fight, regardless if she wins or loses, but, you know, come out without any sort of serious, I guess, damage or anything like that. You know, it'd be nice to see her sort of walk away from the sport in a positive way and still be sort of in one piece after the fight.
Yeah, she's someone that that you just want to see do well, Roxanne. She's just, you know, she's just such a nice sort of happy person. It's not really typical of a fighter, to be honest. She's just so sort of friendly and kind of gentle natured. So you always want her to do well, or at least not get hurt. But you know, sometimes it's hard not to wear the Aussie goggles as well. We you know, we like to see the Aussies do well. So I think it's going to be a fun fight. And also, we'll touch on the preliminary card. Not Australian, but a Kiwi. We've got Carlos Juhlberg, who's fighting his second UFC fight. He's taking on Fabio Charrant of France, who's 0-2 in the UFC. He's got his back against the wall. You would think normally 0-3 is a ticket out the door. So yeah, so Juhlberg, City Kickboxing trained. He's 31 years old. He's had one UFC fight in which he lost to Kennedy. I'm not even going to try and pronounce his surname, to be honest, because I think I'm going to butcher it. But it was a crazy fight. If you remember this one, it was mad. It was, you know, obviously Juhlberg, he's quite raw. He was 3-0 coming into the UFC, so it was probably... it's kind of ahead of schedule, I think, really, for most fighters. You wouldn't be expected to be kind of having to learn and adapt in the UFC after three fights. But yeah, he dropped Kennedy in the first round, and then he kind of gassed out after that, and ended up getting stopped in the second. But yeah, it was a fun fight while it lasted. But I guess the interesting thing with him is obviously I touched on there the getting signed to the UFC after three fights. Like, you're realistically, you're still finding your feet as a professional fighter, right? Like I don't know, how would you have adapted in a big show like that when you were three fights in?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You know, three fights in and you're being signed to the biggest promotion in the world, and then, you know, you're getting in there and you've got all this you've got all this hype around you because you come from City Kickboxing, you train with people like Adesanya, Hooker, you know, Shane Young, Kai Kara France, all these guys. So ultimately, yeah, the pressure was always, and the ability to perform was, I guess, stacked against you. Look, without sounding too terrible, Carlos got signed because he's trains at City Kickboxing. He's a teammate with all those guys I mentioned before. He's a handsome dude. He's marketable. I believe he was the Bachelor in New Zealand. He was on the Bachelor in New Zealand potentially. I think, yeah, he was some sort of thing like that. So you can understand from a business point of view, like, why wouldn't you sign the guy? But I do believe he has the ability to compete. He has the talent. He has the ability to compete. He's a big guy. He's an athletic guy. But I just feel like you sort of said, it's a strange thing to go from being three fights in to fighting in the UFC against, you know, someone who didn't get there after three fights and just, you know, walk in the door. This dude had to grind to be there, and he came into that fight, you know, ready to kill Carlos. It wasn't like I think I don't want to, like, you know, speak of what Carlos's mindset was, but I guess from the watching him in fight week, seeing the stuff that he was saying to the media and how he was kind of carrying himself, he almost came into that fight like with a sense of like, oh no, it's good. Yeah, this is gonna be light work. I'm fighting on the same card as my teammates. It's gonna be all good. Go in there, get a win, and that's it. It's kick off my UFC career. And then obviously, like you said, it was a wild fight. He ran into a brick wall, ultimately didn't go his way. But now this is the chance for him to sort of, I guess, hit the Uno reverse card and actually make the debut that he wanted to make. You know, he's fighting on the same card as Izzy and Blood Diamond, and they're gonna be, you know, have all that momentum there. I feel like this is going to be a different sort of Carlos that's going to show up, and I feel like he does have the talent and the ability to compete at this level, but it's just got to. It's almost like a case of, yeah, just being able to put everything aside again, similar to how Jacob has to. He has to put everything aside. You're not there to do anything but get the win for yourself and your own career and just to take that step forward. And like you said, you're coming in against a guy who's 0-2 in the UFC. This guy's coming in there to kill you. He's coming in there to get the win, to stay in the UFC, to keep earning money for, you know, himself and the people I imagine he cares about within his life. And that's a motivated individual. You know, he's not there for clout. He's not there to follow in the hype of anyone else. He's there to fight. So, I mean, it's going to be one of those things where it's like, if Carlos shows up, does his job, uses his talents and his sort of natural attributes, he can do well. If he doesn't, he's going to get bashed and he's going to be, you know, 0-2 in the UFC himself. And then we're almost going to be asking the question, like, was this almost rushed? Was this a case of a bit too soon into the UFC?
Yeah, I mean, there's, as you alluded to there, there's clearly some ability in Carlos. Like we saw in that first fight, he's clearly an athletic guy. There's some ability there. And I think he's got a good dance partner for this one. Fabio Chiront is a wild sort of fighter. He's a little bit raw himself. And he's what I guess Teddy Atlas would call an available fighter. He's there. He's in your face. He's going to, you know, so I think this is a good opportunity for Carlos to really to chalk up a win. But just to show what he can do, like, I guess we're going to find out. A guy like Fabio, who's 0-2, sort of a bit raw himself. I think it's just, we're going to find out really whether he's at the UFC caliber just yet or not.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And like you said, it's going to be all the opportunities going to be given to him. You know, there's going to be chances for him to sort of, to put on a show and, you know, get after it and secure a dominant victory. It's just going to be down to whether he can cancel out the noise and then show up and do his job.
All right. So yeah, also on the card from City Kickboxing, we've got Blood Diamond, as you touched on before. He's taking on Jeremiah Wells. So again, it's his UFC debut. So it's probably a good chance for him to show his wares as well. So what do you know about this one?
Well, so obviously Blood Diamond, you know, he's making his debut. I believe he's only got maybe a handful of MMA fights himself. His last fight on, I believe before he got signed, was on Eternal. They did a card and he fought Dimps Gillies, I believe. And that was an absolute barn burner of a fight and he put on a show. But obviously, you know, this is a kind of, while he's early into his sort of MMA tenure and he's making his UFC debut, he's a very, very experienced combat athlete with all of the kickboxing and boxing experience that he has, you know, winning King in the Ring, following in that sort of blueprint that was laid out by Adesanya. The man is dangerous. And from the whispers that I've received, you know, from some of the boys that are involved at City Kickboxing, he's pretty well-rounded, you know, as a whole as well. Like he's got the grappling and wrestling wherewithal, at least in a defensive sort of capability to keep the fight standing. And obviously on the feet, he's real unorthodox. He's real wild. He'll throw punches from different angles. He does all sorts of unorthodox, tricky things. Like he'll dip his head down, slip a punch and punch backwards behind his own head to try and land a shot on you just to throw you off. And then follow that up with like a head kick or, you know, jumping switch kick and stuff like that. So he's going to, I guess, come into this fight with the confidence that he knows he can like put anyone away. He's wearing 4 ounce gloves. And unless, you know, the fight hits the ground and he's unable to sort of get back to his feet, it's going to be a horrible, horrible night, you know, in the office. If you can't take him down, he's going to be able to like just pick you apart and beat you up for however long it takes him to put you away.
Yeah, so we've seen quite a few kickboxers sort of try and make the transition along, and the results have been mixed, right? It was obviously Israel Adesanya, whilst everyone just questioned his grappling over and over and over when he came across, but he's just managed to adapt. There are others that maybe get caught out a little bit. So, like, how do you feel someone like that sort of bridges the gap grappling wise when they come over to MMA? Like, how long can it take? How easy is it for someone to adapt their game to MMA coming from a striking background?
Well, the grappling side of things and the wrestling side of things, like, there's no shortcuts. I mean, there's no shortcuts in fighting as a whole. You got to get in and just do the work. But I always touch on this, you know, on the feet, you might be okay, the person that has had the 100 stand-up fights or whatever it might be. And you might be fighting a guy who's only had, you know, maybe, say, for example, 5 MMA fights. So, and then, you know, you have a distinct advantage on the feet, but there's, you know, one punch can land and that's your night over. And that can happen at any point by anyone. We've seen it happen numerous times before. We've seen guys make mistakes, you know, they leave their chin up in the air, they drop their hand, get caught, and it's not always the better striker that wins these sort of engagements. Whereas on the grappling, wrestling side of things, there's no like, oh, one punch is going to land and change the outcome and maybe potentially end the fight. Like, if you don't put in the work, you don't work at the grappling and the wrestling, you're not going to find some miracle one move that you're going to be able to do that's just going to stop everything and shut everything down. Like, it's a grind. It's difficult. It's hard. You've got to work at it. You've got to put it in. And obviously at City Kickboxing, I imagine that these boys being put through their paces, especially, you know, guys like Blood Diamond, guys like Adesanya, to try and, you know, increase their ability to sort of keep the fight where they are going to do the best work and, you know, shine the best, and that's on the feet. But that's something else that'll come out in the fight fairly quickly, you know, because everyone can say, oh, no, my grappling is really good. And I train my grappling and I do my wrestling. These people think I can't grapple. They think I can't wrestle. That's all fair enough, but that's going to be exposed fairly quickly in the first couple seconds that, you know, someone decides to grab a hold of you and try to take you down or put you up against the fence, which we've seen from, like, for example, from Adesanya. We've seen him be able to keep the fight standing, use his defensive wrestling very well to kind of get back to his feet or even, you know, limit the abilities of his opponents, like Vittori and that, to take him down, and then obviously do his best work, and that's on the feet. But then on the other opposite end of the spectrum, against someone like Jan Blachowicz and even Vittori in their first fight, we saw him get taken down, we saw him get put on his back, and he was unable to sort of respond from that. Now, coming back to Blood Diamond, it's going to be the same thing. Like, are you actually taking those grappling and wrestling sort of breakdowns and sessions seriously and you know, picking them up and actually trying to implement them in your game? Or are you just doing it, going through the motions, being like, oh, today's wrestling, whatever, we'll just wrestle? And that's going to come out on the fight. Like, in the first exchange where they're clinched up, they're against the cage, or there's, you know, an attempt at a takedown, if he gets put on his back, and especially without much to offer, you know, on the way down, or even with it, with limiting what happens in that sort of clinch exchange or whatever, he's going to be ultimately pretty well in trouble from there on. So you're not going to be able to then fake your way through it and be like, oh, no, like, I'm still good. It's that all goes out the window when someone's on top of you punching you in the head and you can't get back up. But like I said, I feel like they're going to be well prepped. The boys at City Kickboxing do tremendous work with their athletes. They put in the work. So I'm expecting he's going to be prepared, and I'm taking it seriously in the, I guess, facade that they're putting forward, that they are doing those things in those areas. But like I said, on the night of the fight, it's going to come out because you can't hide it. And there's no one little magic trick that you can be able to pull out to save you in those situations.
Yeah, I guess you just have to trust City Kickboxing's judgment that they would know that he's ready to make the leap up. And but I guess you know, if you haven't done your homework, if you haven't done your grappling training or taken it seriously, then you get found out pretty quickly at the highest level, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, well, really across the board. I mean, and it goes both ways with everything, right? Like, I can come into, like, for example, I can come into a fight and be like, yeah, nah, this camp, man, I did so much wrestling, taking everyone down, I was killing it, you know. Well, all the boys that came into camp, took them all down, couldn't stop me, whatever. And, you know, that's all well and good. And then you get in there on the night and that wasn't the case. And you go to shoot that first takedown and you get your head sprawled into the mat. And all of a sudden there's a guy on your back punching your face in. And it's like, well, you did that to yourself. So, yeah, I feel like it's going to be quite a telling sort of fight for him. And it's an opportunity for him to sort of have a coming out party and really show out, because if he's prepared and done the work and put it in, then he's ultimately going to put on a show and he's going to have a coming out party and be able to like get a violent finish doing something crazy that he does, which we've seen him do in his kickboxing fights, and ultimately, you know, come in, get a big win, potentially get a bonus and potentially secure a bucket load of fans straight off the bat.
Absolutely. And speaking of highlight reels, our highlight reel finishes, and maybe someone who was also guilty of not doing their homework early on in their career, it's in the co-main event. It's Bam Bam Tai Tuivasa, who's taking on Derek Lewis. Now, he's come out in the media and said that he was actually drunk when he accepted this fight, and you would probably have to be, really, because Derek Lewis is a hellacious puncher. But have you ever been drunk when you've accepted a fight before?
Early on in my sort of when I was still an amateur, I sort of did that a couple of times, where on the night I've obviously fought, I've gone out to celebrate with a few drinks afterwards, and then, you know, you get talking to the promoter, and then all of a sudden they're like, hey, I've got a show in 2 weeks, I'm looking for someone for this guy, what do you think? And you're like, yeah, whatever. And then, you know, come Monday, Tuesday, when you're back in the gym, your coach is like, oh, so 2 weeks from now you're fighting this guy, and you're like, oh, okay, I guess I'm fighting this guy in 2 weeks. I guess, yeah, I was guilty of that a few times in my amateur career, but yeah, obviously doing that at this level and in the heavyweight division with someone like Derek Lewis, that's a whole different ballgame. It's pretty terrifying, because obviously he's got the most knockouts in UFC history. The dude hits hard. It's the heavyweight division where anyone can put anyone to sleep. So for Ty to do that while he was drunk and then accept a fight with Derek Lewis, that's pretty crazy, but I'm not surprised at all. He's a special kind of guy, and I think that's why he's just going from strength to strength, and also just like people are just, you know, getting on board. They're like, okay, this guy is someone we need to follow along with.
Yeah, I guess it's not that surprising, is it, for a man who's just as famous for drinking beer out of a shoe as he is for his fighting talents? Yeah, we probably shouldn't be that surprised with a situation like that. But this has all the makings of just a fight of the night sort of thing. And it might only be a brief fight, but it's going to be fun while it lasts, because obviously Tai Tuivasa, we know he's a banger. He's a he's a heavy striker. Loves to stand up and throw down. He's on a 4-fight win streak, all of them knockouts, so he's in form. You know, he's just come fresh off a win over Augusto Sakai in December, in which that was an absolute demolition job in the end. But Lewis is coming off a brilliant KO win over Chris Dorcas as well, who's a really sort of exciting upcoming talent too. So he's 10 fights into his UFC tenure now. He seems to have found his way, Tai Tuivasa. He's obviously been training at American Kickboxing Academy, which has sort of added to his grappling arsenal and added a bit of fight IQ to his game as well. But anyway, how do you see this fight playing out?
It's going to depend on if Tai is going to show up to this fight as the sort of more patient, well-rounded athlete that he's sort of shown he is now in these last 4 fights, or if he's going to get in there, cop that first punch from Derek and be like, okay, let's just scrap, and then, you know, just ultimately stand there and try and throw big bombs until one of them gets put to sleep, like we kind of saw in the Greg Hardy fight. And obviously that time it went his way, but Greg Hardy is a vastly different opponent than Derek Lewis. Derek Lewis is a scary, scary puncher. He obviously can put anyone away. And he's shown that, being that he has the most knockouts. So it's just going to depend on whether we see Ty kind of mix it up. You know, you kind of saw it in his last fight with Augusto, and even at the start of the Hardy fight, he was landing a lot of low kicks. He was digging in low kicks. He was working from range. He wasn't just sort of standing in the pocket and swinging until towards the end of that fight. Obviously, they started doing that, but at the start, he was working from range. He was throwing a lot of kicks, and you know, like you said, he trained at AK. He's obviously picked up on the stuff with the wrestling and actually just getting after and doing the work, because even in his last fight with Augusto, we saw him kind of change the positions on the cage, ultimately control Augusto on the cage. And then every time they disengaged, he was throwing big bombs, even ultimately faking some level changes and just getting a hold of him to kind of throw him off a bit and then go back to doing his best work. And that's with his punches and his kicks. So I feel like for him to capitalize in this fight and to get this win, to make it five in a row and potentially get another finish, he's going to have to mix it up. He's going to have to use those low kicks and ultimately try and press Derek up against the cage and kind of do that work that he did in his previous fight, where he's working the clinch against the cage. He's landing the big punches when he can, but then ultimately he's staying safe, getting back out of range, using his kicks and kind of picking him apart that way. I think if he just stands in the pocket, as much as I want to see the Aussies do well, I do not like his chances of doing that with Derek Lewis. I think, yeah, that's going to be a bad move in the end, and ultimately horrible fight IQ from someone who's on a 4-fight win streak and shown that his fight IQ has improved tremendously.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess that's the game that Tai Tuivasa has played sort of early in his career, is standing in the pocket, but you're really one punch away from disaster with Derek Lewis in the end. But I guess like you touched on there, four-fight win streak for Tai Tuivasa. Obviously, Derek Lewis is only one fight removed from an interim title fight, so that puts Tai Tuivasa, unbelievably, given that he was four fights ago, he was released from the UFC, or so it was rumored anyway. So he was basically on his way out onto the UFC scrap heap there, and now four fights later, here he is. Really, just you know, he's got an opportunity to put himself in the mix. So how close do you reckon that would put him to touching on a title fight if he beats Derek Lewis?
If he goes out there and finishes Derek Lewis, we got to be talking about potentially him fighting either one fight or fighting for a belt, or potentially even fighting for an interim belt with the situation with Francis and what's happening with his, obviously his injury and his kind of battle with the UFC at the moment over the financial sort of stipulations that are involved. You know, you, like you said, Derek Lewis just fought for an interim title. Ultimately the outcome I see is if Bam Bam comes out and wins this fight, he can either be fighting potentially Stipe or Cyril for an interim title. But ultimately he's going to either be fighting for an interim title, or he's going to be one fight off fighting for the world title. I'd like to see him go off a win now, be on a 5-fight win streak, go for a belt. That, you know, he's an Aussie, we want to see them do well. But ultimately what I see happening is if he wins against Derek, he'll definitely be one fight off fighting for the belt, regardless of what they decide to do. But ultimately, I could potentially see them doing John Jones versus Stipe for an interim belt, and then Ty fighting the winner of that fight. Or they ultimately just give him another tough test in someone like Cyril, and then he goes on and beats Cyril. He's definitely fighting for a world title against whoever has it at any point after that, because, you know, you beat guys like Derek Lewis, you beat guys like Cyril Garn, you beat guys like Stipe, you beat guys like Curtis Blaydes, you know, you name them, you're going to be fighting for a world title, especially in the heavyweight division. It's not like it's an ultimately super stacked division like the lightweight division, for example, you know. So he's right there in the mix. I think a win's going to put him ahead of some people, and could potentially, yeah, the way it goes. And like you said, he's one of those people that's accepting fights when he's out drinking and stuff like that. It could all fall on his lap, and he could be fighting for a world title before the end of 2022 as we know it.
Absolutely. And either way, it's going to be must watch. And it's going to be one of those ones you just can't blink because it could be over at any given second. And, you know, it's one of those co-main events where it's just like you can be sometimes if it's as good as it looks on paper, you can be absolutely drained by the time the main event comes around. Like if you look back at, I think it was Colby versus Usman. I think the co-main event was Gaethje versus Chandler. Like that was one of the most incredible fights, and I remember just being absolutely spent by the time Colby and Usman came out. So this could be one of those scenarios as well.
100%. I mean, it's got all the. I mean, if you're gonna put a bet on, you're probably gonna pick either guy that you fancy for a first round knockout. But you know, it could be three rounds of these dudes just standing there. Punching each other in the face, trying to, you know, put each other away, and ultimately both guys making it to the end of the fight. But in saying that, we saw that from Lewis. We've seen him in situations like that where he's going into, you know, the final round and then all of a sudden shuts the lights out, wins the fight, and you're like, what just happened? Like this makes no sense. Like it was back and forth, and all of a sudden he's just put someone's lights out, and you know, Ty's got the ability to do that as well. I wouldn't be surprised, honestly, if we're all wrong and it doesn't finish in the first round and it ends up being just three rounds of them two like beating each other up. But it's going to be tricky for that to be the outcome. We know, you know, Derek himself has touched on that. He doesn't like fighting for a long time. He's not someone that enjoys doing a lot of work. He just likes to sort of get in, put hands on people, get out. And if there was only... Yeah, if there was only three round title fights, Derek Lewis is a champion forever. I see him putting people away for the foreseeable future. But unfortunately, you know, for a title, you got to be able to potentially go those extra two rounds, and that's kind of been his detriment a couple of times. But in this fight, he's got what he wants. He's got someone who's going to be more than willing to stand there at certain points, if not the whole time, and. It's going to be who can land that big shot first.
Yep, and obviously the main event is it's hard not to be excited about it. I just sort of talked about being kind of emotionally spent after the co-main event, but as a combat sports fan, you can't not be excited about this one. It's obviously Robert Whittaker, former UFC middleweight champion from Australia, up against Israel Adesanya, who's obviously Nigerian background, but based at City Kickboxing in New Zealand, current UFC middleweight champion. We've seen this one before, back in, I think it was October 2019. Adesanya won pretty convincingly in the first fight. So... I guess, yeah, how do you see it playing out this time around?
Yeah, obviously, you know, we saw the result of the first fight. Izzy was able to get the finish in front of a capacity crowd at Marvel Stadium. So, yeah, this time around, I think we're seeing a rejuvenated and motivated Robert Whittaker coming into this fight. Someone who is, I guess, from what we've seen in the media so far and you know, from both guys, you know, it seems like Rob Whittaker's made the acceptance of the first fight and taken the result on and gone, okay, I came into that fight thinking that I had this invincibility. I was saying, you know, ultimately some things that didn't make sense at all in the lead up to the fight, like coming into fight week talking about I'm a better striker than Israel and be able to show that. And it's like, I mean, you're a great striker, you're a phenomenal athlete, you're a great mixed martial artist, but let's be honest, if we're talking about just the striking side of things, Izzy's leaps and bounds ahead. So I thought that was really weird. But this time around, he's coming in. He seems like he's more attentive to the dangers that Adesanya presents, having fought him already, but also, you know, seeing their paths since that first fight. We've seen Rob Whittaker just dismantle contenders left and right and, you know, go from strength to strength and show his well-rounded skill set. And then obviously Izzy's just gone through challenges the same way and just kind of been showing that he's just better than ever. So this time around, it's a bit of a different lead up. You know, you've got both guys taking each other for what it is that okay, I'm fighting someone who's dangerous. But then from Adesanya's point of view, he's like, I've already beat this guy. I'm going to do it again. I'm going to do it better this time. Rob's like, I got to use my well-rounded skill set. I got to respect the dangers that he presents on the feet. but ultimately I can win this fight if I back myself and use my abilities. I definitely don't see this fight finishing like the last one. I don't think we're going to see a quick finish. I feel like if we are going to see a finish, it's going to be in the later rounds, and that could be to either guy, whether that's Adesanya with another knockout or Rob Whittaker potentially, you know, grinding him out with takedowns, with this wrestling, using his warranted game and ultimately securing like a TKO or submission. But really, I see this fight going all five rounds, and it's going to be a masterclass. Like you said, it's going to be a fight for the fans, you know, whether you're someone who follows the sport religiously, whether you're just a casual sort of fan of the sport or the UFC, it's going to be one of those fights that's going to have you there for 25 minutes going, whoa, what the heck just happened? And like, you're just going to be, you know, going through those range of emotions and going like, oh, I can't believe this. And did you see that? And you're going to be tapping people next to you being like, what the heck is going on? And I feel like, yeah, it's going to be a back and forth fight. Ultimately though, I do not see a scenario where Rob can hold Izzy down long enough to capitalize and, you know, get a finish. I'm not saying he can't win the fight. He's 100% possible he can win the fight. He's got all the tools to win the fight. But if he's coming in planning on, you know, just taking him down and finishing on the mat, I don't think that that's going to, you know, come to fruition. If you look at the fight with, you know, like he's talking about looking at the blueprint from the fight with Jan and then seeing what Jan did easy. And he's like, you know, this is something that we can capitalize on. If you just come in thinking that you're going to take him down, hold him down and finish him on the mat, that's not going to, you know, it's not going to work. You've got to be smart about when you decide to pursue the clinching, when you decide to pursue the wrestling, how much effort you put into trying to keep him flat on his back, because he's obviously gotten a lot better with his defensive wrestling, his defensive grappling, being able to scramble and get back to his feet. And you don't want to, across a five-round fight, you don't want to burn yourself out trying to keep this guy on his back for the first two, three rounds, and then it doesn't go your way. Ultimately, you're coming in that fourth, fifth round, and he's the champion, and he's going to just use his reach, use his distance. You're almost every round that fight continues on, you're hitting the reset button for Rob, unfortunately. You know, if for Izzy, it's simple. He can come out every round, be at range, pick you apart, use all his weapons, and just kind of stay comfortably there and do what he does. He's gone through the motions. He's done it 100 times before, and he can do it 100 times moving forward. Whereas for Rob, he's got to come out, do the work to get inside, take Izzy down, keep him on the mat, ultimately then try to do damage, hopefully get a submission, try and get a TKO. And if that doesn't happen, now round two, you're coming out, you've got to do all that again to get this guy down on the mat, which is so difficult enough as it is. And then maybe then you've only got another minute where you're on top of him on the ground trying to work, trying to do that. And unless you're, you know, unless you're in shape and unless you're going to be relentless with that's the pursuit that you're going to do, it's going to be hard to, I guess, just think that you're going to put him on his back and finish the fight. You've got to be ready to do the same thing for potentially 25 minutes where you're restarting. You're starting in the terrible position almost, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it feels like for Robert Whittaker, a lot more has to go right for him to win this fight, right? Like I feel like Adesanya sort of has some advantages there, and like you touched on there, a lot has to go right for Robert Whittaker. But I think it's you know, their skills are so well matched up. Even if not a lot is happening in the fight, it's going to be really entertaining because it's just going to be a chess match. Like we kind of saw that with when Whittaker fought Darren Till. There's just kind of like there wasn't a whole lot of punches landed sort of outside of the first round there where Whittaker went down, but you know, it was fun to watch because it was this chess match. You could see the little traps that they were setting up for each other. They were kind of throwing feints and that sort of thing. But you touched on Whittaker being sort of rejuvenated there, and I think that's a good word because he alluded to himself after the first Adesanya fight that he was kind of burnt out on the sport, he was overtrained and all those sorts of things, and you know, he's made the sort of necessary adjustments now, obviously, and the proof is in the pudding with the wins over Darren Till and Jared Cannonier and Kelvin Gastelum that he's reeled off since the first Adesanya fight. And I've been chatting to his coach Alex Prates this weekend, and there is actually an article coming this week on Fight News Australia, so keep your eyes peeled for that one. But he sort of mentioned that that Whittaker was uncharacteristically thrown off by all the sort of talk and stuff that Adesanya does in the lead up to that first fight. Normally he's pretty unbothered by that sort of thing, but that time out he kind of got sucked into it. He says this time around he's completely unfazed and he's in a much better place, and they're really confident. Internally, they're really confident that they've got the tools, that Whittaker's done the work, and he's made the adjustments that are needed to win this fight. So it's going to be really interesting to see how differently it plays out and sort of how differently Whittaker approaches it in the cage.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, going from, I guess, you know, you're coming into a fight where, you know, someone's trash talking you, like we saw in that first fight. He's you know, it got to him and kind of threw him off his game a little bit as well. But that kind of speaks to, if you're saying you're not going to be fazed this time around, it's got to speak to sort of the sort of day-to-day stuff. You know, if you're going to the gym, you're training, you have that core group of people around you, I guess, you know, martial arts, you know, people will tell you martial arts about respect and all these sort of things, but you got to have that while you're training. You've still got to have that banter and those opportunities where you are copping that kind of, not a, well, I don't want to use the word abuse, but almost abuse, like friendly abuse from like people. And you are having those back and forth sort of things where when you do get into a situation where you're fighting someone who is trying to get under your skin and they're out talking to you and they're trash talking you, you kind of can just wave it off and be like, man, whatever, like I'm not fazed by it. And it seems like, you know, this time around he is a bit more calm. He is a bit more sort of like nonchalantly kind of going, you know, whatever it is, what it is. And we've already seen from Izzy, he's just going from strength to strength. He's just doing his thing again, you know. He's making memes. He's talking smack. He's saying all these things that he would normally say. He's just doing what he does, you know, just being himself. So, yeah, I feel like this time around it's already different from the first fight, especially now going into fight week. Both guys' demeanor is a bit different in that sort of sense. But ultimately, as the week progresses, we're going to see if that's really the case, if Rob's really not bothered by anything and if he's really sort of a different person that's showing up for this fight as opposed to the first fight. And that's going to come to fruition towards the end of the week when you start getting into press conferences and you start talking about weigh-ins and media, like stuff like that. You know, we're going to see if that's really the case or if he's actually, you know, kind of just putting on a front and trying to have an air of confidence that he's not, you know, bothered by anything that Izzy's doing. But the other sort of factor of that is how much is Rob going to, even if he's unbothered by the trash talk and that sort of stuff, how much is he going to look to engage in that? You know, potentially that could be something that we kind of see from him. You know, Rob's the kind of guy, we've seen it all through his career, he'll like engage in sort of like a friendly trash talk and, you know, he's joking around, he loves a bit of a laugh and all sort of stuff like that. But, you know, we could potentially see him come into this fight, get into fight week, get into the press conference, get into the media, and himself start capitalizing on the trash talk and try and, you know, get under his skin and upset him a little bit. You know, I wouldn't be surprised by that at all if he decided to kind of try and flip the script a bit.
Absolutely. And yeah, well, I guess it's all going to play out this Sunday, Feb 13th, Australian time, of course. The prelims will be on UFC Fight Pass, KO, all that sort of stuff. And the main card, of course, is on pay-per-view, UFC.tv. Locally, we've got, we'll quickly touch on this one. Coastal Combat 10 is going down. Of course, we have a Coastal Combat champion in our ranks here. So do you actually still hold the belt at the moment, or has that been vacated?
I currently still hold the belt. Unfortunately, yeah, that's been, you know, something that hasn't come to fruition with having the chance to sort of defend it. You know, a bunch of different factors. There's been like the COVID stuff. There's been, you know, just availability sort of things where, you know, as a fighter, you've got to capitalize on opportunities, especially in this time with COVID. You've got to capitalize on when they come to you. So it's been unfortunate that a lot of the times when they've been sort of matching their shows for Coastal, I've already had been committed to another fight on a different promotion. And even now, like in hindsight, with Eternal being cancelled, 64 being cancelled in Perth, ultimately, hindsight 2020, I could have been defending my featherweight title on this Coastal Combat show this weekend. But you know, that's something that I'll figure out with Joel if they decide to give me the opportunity to do that later in the year when they do another show, or whether they decide to, you know, make me vacate the belt. But as it is right now, I'm still the current Coastal Combat featherweight champion. And yeah, Coastal Combat 10 goes down this weekend, and it's going to be a great local event. It's got some cracker fights on it already.
Absolutely. Is there anyone from any of your teammates from freestyle on the card?
No, unfortunately, yeah, no, no one from freestyles on the card. But you know, local talent wise, Australian talent wise, there's some talented fighters on that card already, and it's going to be a great show. And the way the show runs and the way it's set up, the venue, the production value, all of that, it's quite unique. And you know, you've got people behind the scenes that aren't trying to be like something else or trying to make like a half-ass budget version of like a major promotion or anything like that. They're doing their own thing. It's unique, and there's the passion behind it. There's the actual attention to detail for the fighters, for the people that are going to be viewing the event, the people attending the event, the officials. You know, it's all very, very well put together. You know, having fought on Coastal, it's been one of my favorite promotions that I fought on. You know, the whole experience has been awesome. I was even fortunate enough to commentate one of the events as well, and that was a crazy process to see how well organized that side of things is. You know, I showed up and I had a booklet about that thick of like information on every person fighting on the card. Thankfully, I'm one of those people that is highly into sort of MMA across the board, and especially, you know, the Australian sort of scene. So I didn't really need to refer to the book, but it was great to have that there anyway, and to have that presented to me. So that can just show you that how much attention, detail, and care and passion is put into this show, and why the fights always prove to be so good. And this time around, it's going to be no different.
Absolutely. And yeah, the net result there is, they're always really great events to watch. So you can, I believe there's a live stream available from the Coastal Combat website. So look them up, and obviously there's tickets available there as well for those who are local to Queensland. So yeah, we'll leave that one there. That's what's happening. They're going head to head with UFC 271. So that's it's a ballsy move from them. So it'd be interesting to see. It's a great weekend of MMA for the Australian fans. So that's us. Fight Talk Down Under, episode one in the books. It's been a fun one. Remember to like, subscribe, and subscribe on YouTube. Join the Facebook group. There's a new Facebook group being added there, so you can join in the discussion there. Let us know anything you want us to cover, anything that you might disagree with, or anything you want to discuss on the Facebook group. It's going to be an open forum there. Like and subscribe on YouTube. We're going to be on Podbean, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts as well as YouTube here. So stay tuned. We're going to be everywhere you get your podcasts. So thanks again, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Lockjaw Justin Van Heerden, for being here tonight. And looking forward to a good week of fights.
It's going to be a cracker week of fights, and you know, it's awesome that we've got our first episode of our podcast wrapped up, and you know, we're going to go from strength to strength and just sort of keep it going. So I'm excited. Here I am, climbing up.